Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Glenn, bro, I love you, man.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily, presented by Mokarum Injury Lawyers.
Mokarum Injury Lawyers, hard as hell to say, easy to dial, 281-222-2222. If you've been injured in an accident, you know who to call, baby. 281-222-2222. Boys, the MLB has, they've released their first look at who fans, this is fan voting in the for the All-Star game. The MLB has released the first look at who all the fans want to see in this year's MLB All-Star game. Obviously, no surprise, Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani lead their respective leagues after the first returns. This isn't final voting. This is just where we sit right now. And I'm going to be honest with you, man. I look through here. I'm a little disappointed with where the Astros sit, and I'm a little bit frustrated with the whole situation. In fact, Ron, I'm at a spot where I understand why Major League Baseball does this. The fan interaction and the literal interaction that the league gets beyond just the fans voting, but this has gotten to a point where it's plumb ass silly. And this is coming from an Astros fan. Some of it is. If we just look at it through the Astros lens, we can all get to a point where this is silly. Right.
It has been for. It is what it is. This is a fans thing where the names are going to jump in as opposed to the guys that are really having great years.
Which I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem acknowledging that, Ron. But when it's gotten to a point, I'm gonna lay out why it's gotten to a point where it literally is just a popularity contest. Guys that aren't even playing are on the list ahead of other guys that are playing and having good years. And I'll look through an Astros lens. Take a wild guess where Yordan Alvarez is in American League DHs.
Oh, he's a name that people know. I'm guessing he's probably in the top five, top three.
He's fourth.
Yordan.
How many games has Yordan played this year?
I don't know, but he hadn't played well when he was in
them. Right. It doesn't matter, right?
Not many.
Right?
I don't know. There should even be a qualifying. There should be enough games to qualify, and he wouldn't.
Hey, here's one for you. Take a wild guess where Christian Walker is on American League first baseman.
I would say he's probably low. Not
fifth.
Fifth, really?
Christian Walker is fifth.
Yordan has played 29 baseball games, by the way.
29 baseball games is fourth. Think about that. The first baseman that are ranked below him. You talk about, we didn't even mention, Ron, you were out of town. I know you know it, but we didn't talk about it. The Astros are the ones that submit positions for their players. The fact that the Astros submitted Jose Altuve in second base and played him leading up to the All-Star game,
played him
like six out of 12 games, they played him at second base. Submitted him as a second baseman, and now luckily I think he's third or fourth.
I was going to say he might start.
Well, he's not. I don't. From the fan perspective, he's not going to make it. Which I think they got that one right. Here's a couple of them that I think are probably ones that are misses for the Astros. Jeremy Pena's third for American League shortstops. And I'm not mad at the kid in I almost said Oakland, the kid in Sacramento, the kid with athletics.
Wilson.
Jacob Wilson, he's having a hell of a year. There's no doubt about it. You bump the stats up to it. I don't want to hold it against him that he's playing for a trash team. However, I do think Pena, the numbers are similar, and Pena's resume would put him ahead of him for me. But Pena was third. That one I'm not mad at. Paredes is fifth in third baseman. I can't have him no lower than three if it's me. But I understand it's a popularity contest. Yeah, he's not going to be up there.
I'm actually surprised Pena's not over. Who's the is
Bobby Witt and Wilson?
Yeah, I'm surprised Wilson is up there. I mean, his numbers show it, but popularity. I wouldn't think people know him. Maybe people feel sorry for the A's.
Well, you would think that Pena, having done what he did in the World Series would be a more recognizable name. But maybe not. How about Jake Meyers? I mean, this is where it gets to me. Like, clearly, you're not even like the baseball. This is clearly a popularity contest, and we're not even looking at like who we're voting for. And I understand the fans are voting. Certain teams' fans are voting for their guys. I mean, clearly, Houston ain't voting for Jake Meyers. Take a wild guess where Jake Meyers is.
28.
No, there's only 20.
Oh, my fault.
I mean, golly, you can't. There was 20 listed for what that's worth.
What, 18?
19.
Yeah.
I mean, Jake Meyers is having a hell of a year. I mean, even if you don't like the guy, even if you don't like the Astros.
He's having a hell of a year. I wonder what he is up against other outfielders, because it's all outfielders. I wonder what he is up against other outfielders. But he is having a hell of a year.
Man,
he should at least be considered.
I don't know. I'm with you of, hey, man, it is what it is. It's fan votes and – I know everybody out there is going, hey, dummy, it's fans voting for their own guys. Okay, I get it. Like, there's no, but it's gotten to a point where it is totally irrelevant what kind of year a player's having, and it's obvious in this team on both ends of the spectrum. Like, guys that are having really good years are damn near last in voting. Guys that aren't even playing are in the top five and top three. Like, that part doesn't. It's hard for me to put any level of stock,
well, it definitely,
and any significance into it.
And that's why I think I'm glad they started this all MLB teams now, because it used to be like 24-time All-Star. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, 8-time All-Star. And it was like, because I will never forget the year that the Royals fans took over the All-Star game. Do you remember that, Tyler? Clint, do you remember the Royals?
I don't remember.
I do not.
It's like 2015 or 2016. The Royals got, they had seven starters.
Seven starters?
I think the only two people who didn't start that weren't Royals was Mike Trout and Jeter. I think the
Royals. How in the hell did that happen?
In Cincinnati, the Royals fans just went crazy and just they had everybody in they had seven guys. That's when I knew it was a real joke, and they let it happen.
Well, but that's the crazy part is, and I don't know baseball contracts,
and
but
Jeter barely made it late.
I mean, like there's a lot that you know, I mean, there's guys' contracts that are affected by this.
Absolutely.
This kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, it just, to me, it's time to do something. Maybe make it less significant. I don't even know how significant it is now, but make it less significant. Let's stay in Major League Baseball, though. I hate this fan voting thing. I understand why I hate it. I think it's time to do away with it. However, have y'all seen what the MLB is doing this year with the All-Star? I'm a big uniform guy. Have y'all seen what they're doing with the uniforms this year?
Hadn't seen the threads for this year. Uh-uh.
So, one, the AL and NL jerseys it's AL and NL on the chest, right, for American League, National League, but it's in Atlanta this year. So it's a twist on the city of Atlanta and the Atlanta Braves uniforms.
Okay.
And you can see that, you know, the Atlanta A, when they do it on their jersey, you can see the Braves' influence on the jerseys. So the jerseys are really cool, and I think it's pretty cool when it's tied to the city that it's in. But this part of it I love. They're only going to wear those jerseys for some kind of workout day they have and the home run derby. The actual All-Star game, they're going to wear the teams, whatever team you play for, they're going to wear, you're going to wear your own uniform, your home or away uniform, in the All-Star game. I like that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it had been so long since they... Did they do that last year?
No, they had them weird pink... They had like pink...
Yeah.
Pink riding across the chest.
Right,
and
right.
It was like a cream and then a different color. No, that's the part I've always used to love that when I was a kid. That everybody's in their own uniform.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it.
I thought that was pretty clean. So they're going to wear their home and away jerseys. So the Astros uniform, assuming somebody makes it, I'm assuming Hader and and Hunter, and I mean, from a pitcher's perspective, we're going to have several guys, right? I mean, you got to believe.
Hunter Brown. Hunter Hader.
You got to believe those guys are going to be in the mix there. So we'll have somebody there representing. I don't know if we're going to have anybody, any position player, get the nod, but we shall see. But tip to cap to Major League Baseball for the uniforms. Thumbs down for the fan voting. Gotta get rid of that crap. All right, last night there was...
At least be weighted. At least, like, be weighted.
Well,
like,
I'm not real familiar with exactly how it's weighted now.
I think
now.
That's what the Pro Bowl does. I think the NFL allows fan, but then they also... There's the players, and then I think then, like, maybe coaches or something like that. Yeah. It's weighted.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure. Surely it is. It's weighted to some degree in baseball, but whatever it is, I just can't. I mean, something's a little lopsided. Cool, we can just keep it moving. No big deal. But that just seems to the fact that it impacts people's contracts along the way, and it is what it is. What I just read. Come on, man. We can't. It's just it's hard to get over that one, man. All right, we had an NBA game last night. Ron, and what was that, game five?
Game five, yep, in OKC.
Game five in OKC, and the Thunder win 120-109. And I think the big question coming out of this game, Ron, is should T.J. McConnell have been on the floor in the fourth quarter more, given that Haliburton is obviously hobbled with the calf issue, which we know more about there. I mean, hell, they're imaging and trying to make a decision on what they do with him moving forward now. But it was obviously bothering him leading up to the game. I think, what was it, two games ago when he hobbled off the press conference stage and everybody knew something was wrong?
It was really rough then, yeah.
Yeah, the big question is, given that and that T.J. McConnell was playing so well, T.J. McConnell had 13 points in the third quarter, and then ended up playing a little over 4 minutes in the fourth quarter. And it's an interesting conversation, Ron, because with Haliburton on the floor, they did get the game to within 2 or 3 points. They got it
95-93 with under eight.
Yeah, they were able to make some good. So I think it's an interesting, fascinating conversation because they didn't get it done. Obviously, Haliburton wasn't himself. But the team played well and came back. And T.J. McConnell, again, this ain't the first time we've seen this with T.J.
This was a little different, though. This was he had 12 in the third quarter. 13 in the third quarter. Yeah. He went off and run. I think they got down 18 at some point, and he brought them back.
Yeah.
And then Siakam started going a little bit in the fourth and got it to two.
Well, I've heard a lot of conversations, and I hadn't necessarily heard this, but this is where I've got to lean on this one because Haliburton – I mean, he's in the record books when it comes to once that game got to 2 or 3 points, Halliburton's ass should have been in the game. There ain't no doubt about that. The conversation to me is more about should McConnell have played more than 4 minutes, not should Haliburton been in the game or not been in the game. That's irrelevant to me. The one thing that pushes me to T.J. McConnell should have been in that game, other than he was hotter than a firecracker in the third quarter, is the way in which he was able to get that done. Like, clearly, because I heard a bunch of guys talking about it this morning, like Haliburton, it wasn't visible. It wasn't like he was limping around the floor and visible to where he couldn't play at all. I tell you what it was obvious and visible was he couldn't push the pace.
Couldn't push the pace and the side to side too.
Yeah. Right. But he couldn't push the pace offensively. And that's exactly what T.J. McConnell was doing. And the reason that I say T.J. should have played more in the fourth quarter is simply because that is the identity of the Pacers. Like, when you take the ability to push it, not that they couldn't, but you take the ability to willingly push it every time you touch the basketball with Halliburton's injury, that impacts the entire game. It takes away from your identity. T.J. was not only hotter than a firecracker, but he was also, I mean, forcing the identity on the Oklahoma City Thunder. And you're trying to wear Oklahoma City down. It's even more important that you push the pace. I thought T.J. should have been allowed the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I got to at least see what Tyrese does before I set him down. Yeah. But there was a point there where I'm like, ooh, boy, I don't know. But, hell, there were some other guys. Like, T.J. could have been in there for Nimard, who kept turning the ball over there late. Like, I thought when when they got it down to 95-93 and then OKC went on a little run and it ended with a turnover from Nembhard that led to a timeout. It was 100-93, called timeout immediately. I thought he was going to put TJ in. And that was the thing for me is it was, you know, that first game where TJ went crazy, it was just a lot of energy. Yeah. And, you know, he had some assists and steals, and you could just see change. TJ was, hey, let me get this one-on-one matchup, and let me get a clear out. And he was taking whoever. Yeah. To the rack and scoring, and like he was making shots in a game where a lot of guys couldn't make shots. So, yeah, I can't believe I'm saying that. I thought TJ, hey, man, you did what we needed in that third quarter. You pulled this together, but nobody else, Siakam a bit, but nobody else really could
pull it together. It's a fascinating conversation because on one hand, you hear a lot of people saying, well, ain't nobody pulling their superstars off the floor in game five late in the fourth quarter in the finals. Well, I think the Indiana Pacers, if you've watched this series, I mean, they're not your typical. Hey, we ain't talking about LeBron here.
I mean, I'm just saying he is 6'7". He could have played alongside with him.
Yes.
As he always
yes.
as he does. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a fascinating conversation. I think that's one that's probably been had in Indiana all year long, Ron, with the way that they play. There's always someone not Halliburton that's pushing the tempo or making plays or got the hot hand. And when do you bring that guy out and put Halliburton? And when do you bring that guy up and put Siakam? And when, if it's not one of those twos that's making the noise, when do you go back to those guys? I would imagine that's a line that they've got to toe there. So
yeah, he couldn't. He just couldn't turn the corner. He just. Yeah. Hopefully he is better. I don't know if he will be. But hopefully he is better because that was tough to watch. I mean, my man just couldn't go like he normally does.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. 3-2 Thunder. The series goes back to Indiana for game six. Ron, you think the Pacers are done or you think they can get them to game seven? I'm going to say get them to game seven just because I picked a seven game series, hell of a series that goes seven to begin with. So I'll stick with my original.
Well, I don't know, man. I don't know. I got to see. I got to hear, you know, what level he is. I love his toughness.
Yeah.
After the game, talking about, you know, if I can walk, I'm going to play, but. Yeah, man, you couldn't, and he kept saying it. You couldn't push the pace.
Yeah.
You couldn't just drive it up there like you want to. And that's a game changer for them, as you said. That's how they play.
All right, Ron, what you got next, man?
All right, best case scenario. How would you look at this? Because this is fascinating to me, where Clint's mind is going with the running back situation. It's not quite clear. Well, it is clear to Clint who should be the running back one. I just wonder if the breakdown is the way you may see it. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Cubley.
Let's hear back that ass up. You got a little versatility with your ass backing up.
Little Linkin Park on a Tuesday.
Is that who that is?
R.I.P. Chester.
Oh, they had a member who passed. Huh? I didn't do a lot of Linkin Park.
The lead singer.
Did I see where, really? The lead singer of Linkin Park?
Some years ago, yeah. He killed himself, unfortunately.
I'm sorry I asked.
They have they did just get a new lead singer, though, and it's a lady singer now.
I mean, you got to.
Interesting approach.
You got to end the band, don't you?
Journey didn't.
Probably easier said than done.
Yeah, Nirvana did. I think that's the way you do it.
Yeah, a little Linkin Park.
Yeah, I remember them doing that. That with Jay-Z.
Oh yeah,
that's what I remember of Linkin Park.
I'm shook.
That's one Fred show Durst? I never got.
Fred
to see.
Fred Durst is
Limp Bizkit.
Limp Bizkit, man.
A little more rough around.
You've been
the
over
edges.
Here tripping, wasn't you?
I'm thinking
we lost Fred.
Fred's dead, man. What's going on here?
Keep rolling, rolling. People testing in Alice in Chains is still going. I'll take your word for it. I just think you gotta shut it down. Especially if it's the lead singer, right?
They're so famous, though, and have such a global following.
I mean, are they... I promise we'll get to this best-case scenario running back thing.
We'll get there.
But are they still making, like, new music, or are they traveling and just playing
I think
their
they
old
just,
stuff, and they need a lead singer. I can understand that.
I think they recently, I haven't followed them close in years, but I know a little of these headlines. I think recently they put out new music with the lady lead singer.
Text line, help me out, Tyler. You may know, Clint, you may. Did the Beatles just shut it down after John Lennon passed?
Oh, who cares? Most overrated band in history. They are. I'm not saying they're bad, but the Beatles are the most overrated musical act in the history of tunes.
I just don't think you could say that.
I always do.
I just don't think you weren't there to experience it.
I don't think you could.
But I can hit play.
I understand maybe some music doesn't care. I feel like that's when you got to be there.
They are
talked about as influencing everything.
I'm not saying they didn't have influence on some music and that, you know, they had a role to play in the history of music, but they are way overrated. People sing their praises like it's just overdone. It's overdone with the Beatles.
I didn't have that. I didn't know that was your take. I didn't know that was your take.
I like some Beatles songs. Really, I'm not even trying to hate.
I feel like that, like the Beatles are one of those kind of off limits. Even if it's not for you, let's just pass on by. And you just said, hell with it, I'm gonna punch you in the nose.
That feeling you're describing, should be one of the signs of what I'm saying.
It's the toughest. Like Elvis, overrated.
Well, that's the king.
And the Beatles are the Beatles.
But you're talking, I think there's a lot of differences between like a 4 or 5 piece set band and a star that changed the world like Elvis Presley.
Changed the world like the Beatles?
It's just our opinions.
Overrated.
You're going to make me go out and do a little research. You're going to figure out what's going on here.
I don't think you're going to find anything.
I don't think you'll find like any.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't the Beatles were more, I mean, obviously a great group, but there was, I mean, that's part of a movement, right? I mean, there was some, like, weren't they like in a time and like part of the reason why they're so big is because of,
it's hard to just, they were a part of a huge moment in musical history. I just think it's overstated.
They were the moment. That's what I'm saying. Like, they were the moment.
Yeah, we didn't have color television yet back then. You're right.
They were just like, there are a couple of acts that are the moment. Wow. All right.
And I'm not saying they weren't the moment. I just think they're overrated.
Kick Rock said Nirvana's overrated also. Again, I feel like that's another one. That's,
maybe in a way, because they were just kind of the founders of the grunge movement. I'm trying to see different sides of an argument. You could take some notes, Ronald.
Again,
I'm going to tell you that album with that little baby, with that little baby boy, another tremendous.
One of those became the moments where they completely. Yeah. We just
invented a genre.
Yes.
Grunge.
I'm not going to say that they put it out in it. we took Poison and we took all of those bands and just pissed them down the drain. When old crazy Kurt Cobain came.
But big fans, I think, can overstate these moments. I'm not saying these moments for these musical acts didn't exist and they didn't have a big impact on music. I just think, especially with the Beatles, they walked on water.
I think we're going to. I feel like it's one of those things where it's hard. I just would assume, Clint, if you were living in the 60s when this occurred, like, I feel like you would have a better understanding.
Strawberry.
That's why, like, I think right now, somebody, when our kids grow up, and when Tyler's dogs get a little older, when they grow up, like, they will listen to Nirvana and be like, what the hell? But you had to kind of be there also to understand the gravity of it. And I feel like the Beatles, again, I think we're going to get to this running back thing, but because this one is up there. What was the Luke Morrow take that caught me off guard, that caught us off guard, Tyler? What was
never ever ever bring flowers to a first date, that one?
No, it was somebody that he, commentator. Scott Hansen,
yeah.
That's he it. Hates Scott Hansen, the Who guy does? From Red Zone.
Red Zone.
Luke does.
Luke just came out and said.
He just signed a new deal, didn't he?
and he thought that's what he talked about. He thought it was the
worst
thing.
Puts his bladder through it every week for
and
us.
And he's just like, oh, my God, who is that guy? I mean, I've never heard anybody hate Scott Hansen. That was first timer. My man. Wow, Tyler.
I don't hate the Beatles, though, or saying that they're bad music. I just.
we were
too much love.
I just we've been doing this show for this long, and I did not know that was your take on that, Tyler. Good. All right.
The Beatles. They became the leading force in Britain's cultural resurgence, ushering in the British invasion of the United States pop market.
Clint has put together lesson plans today.
Well, I'm trying to think, like, in my mind,
Abbey Road,
in my simpleton mind, Beatles, like, I knew when you said that, like, I think several cars ran off in the ditch.
Yeah, but someone texted in, the Beatles were just off limits. My father said you had to be there in the 60s.
Well, I wasn't.
You're gonna be there. You're gonna be there in the 60s.
Hey, man, in 2002, you had to be there to feel the gravity of 50 Cent, Curtis Jackson, when that album came out. You just said you had to be there. You had to be there. That was a mini moment.
Paul McCartney is the best musician ever.
Pretty great, man. I didn't know you had that with you. I don't respect your opinion, but I respect your.
It's just an opinion.
You're out there on it, and you're standing. I mean, you are 10 toes down, maybe an 11th.
Righto.
I mean, the way it was such disgust.
Oh, he's thought about it.
Oh, no, that is. He has been drunk, sober. He's had that conversation multiple times.
Yes. Hit the nail on that. Yeah, I've had this debate with folks.
Wow. Did we just get right here in a block here?
And it makes me feel bad.
The Beatles and Nirvana. Overrated.
It's just the. Maybe the weight people try to attribute to these movements, I think, is sometimes overstated.
What is it? No, you're not running away from that. I'm sorry. We'll get to the.
I'm reading over here. They caused protest.
I just want to know.
They caused unrest in the streets.
Yeah.
I want to know.
Political unrest.
What musical artist, band, whatever, who is somebody that you do put up there? As
you mentioned, Elvis.
Elvis. Okay.
The other king of pop. MJ.
Okay, I'm hoping. All right.
NSYNC, of course.
Coming up next, man. This is we'll get to the running back situation. Like, he's laughing to himself, but there is a tinge of he's serious about this.
Timberlake's a superstar, bro.
Listen, I agree with you on that, but we're not gonna go with NSYNC.
Maybe
that
not fool, so much Lance
that
Bass.
That fool came out there and said the Beatles are over. yeah.
U2
with Lance Bass and JC
Led Zeppelin.
Let's roll with you.
Metallica.
But the beat. All right, coming up.
Katy Perry.
I promise you, we will get to
Katy Perry.
I almost cussed again. We will get to the best case scenario
that was too much.
Of how the Texans should attack this running back situation. That's next.
Now, Kathy Bates, that's a bad bitch right there.
I don't know how long.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, Clint, let's get to it. The text line is absolutely, and YouTube and Twitch is going mad on here. But, Clint, you see this in the backfield. Because there are ways the Texans can kind of go about this with Joe Mixon, Nick Chubb. Joe Mixon, Pro Bowler last year, and not one of those, hey, man, can you do it? Hey, man, can you do it? Hey, man, can you do it? We got down to five people. No, not like Russell Wilson was a Pro Bowler. He was actually one of the three running backs. Him, Derrick Henry and James Cook were the three backs selected to be Pro Bowlers from the AFC. He had one of the best years in the AFC for running backs. He is there, and then they bring in Nick Chubb. Clearly, as you said on the promo that was running, they needed some help back there, and they went and got the best free agent off the market. I think a big thing, not like the offensive line or not like some of the other things on the field for this offense, but I think a big thing is how they handle this situation, right? Because Joe Mixon, that could be something there about him being a lead back that was just in the Pro Bowl. You want to make sure, you know, you don't have no Rafael Devers situation going on or anything like that. But how would you say is the best case scenario to handle Joe Mixon and Nick Chubb?
Well, look, here's the deal. I think this is all – what I'm saying is if you get the best version of Nick Chubb that you possibly can at this point in time, if you get a Nick Chubb that resembles the guy that was in Cleveland and one of the best backs in the league, right? If that is the case, you've got to find a way to use these guys effectively. And most, and this is one of those moments where it's got to be what's best for the team, right? Is how do you use these guys if they're both at their best right now? How do you use these guys and what's best for the team? And I think we've done a lot of comparing to Detroit.
Yeah.
Like, it's clear that you've got two big, more punishing backs that can that are very, very interchangeable. But you got to look at this thing and go, hey, okay, which back is best suited for which role? And I think when I look at this thing, for me, I think best case scenario, Nick Chubb needs to get the bulk of the carries early. And Joe Mixon is your third down back. Joe Mixon is your 2-minute back. Joe Mixon is your fourth quarterback. Now look at fourth quarter running back is what I'm saying, not quarterback.
I love Joe Mixon.
Yeah, look, and it's not about a guy. I think they both could have a – if you get the Nick Chubb that I hope – as a fan, I just pray and hope you get. It's doubtful, but I do hope you get him. Both of these guys, if they were the only back here, could have a Pro Bowl year. It's not about being a Pro Bowler. It's not about the stats. It's about my opinion. What is the best way to deploy these two backs so that in the fourth quarter of games, you have the best player fresh and available in whatever scenario the game presents? You can't dictate. In an ideal world, it'd be nice to say, I want Chubb to have X number of carries and I want Joe Mixon to have X number of carries. But we all know that's not how it works out. Right. So to me, perfect scenario as a Texans fan is you get a kick-ass Nick Chubb that made his name in the NFL, running behind a road-grading offensive line, getting downhill, getting the hard yards. And that's not all he is. I'm not saying that's all he is. I'm not putting him in a corner. I'm just saying that this guy is his whole career has been a downhill guy. Physical run game. He's been that way. He was that way at Georgia. He's been that way at Cleveland. It's what he's ran behind. Right, they ran the ball well when everybody in the country knew they couldn't throw it. That's how Nick Chubb made his name. Then you look at Joe Mixon. How did he make his name? In Cincinnati, being more of a pass protecting, catch the ball out of the backfield. Sure, he can run it downhill. He can put up 1,000 yards. He can do all those things, right? But what, given those two back skill set, what's the best role? And I think best case scenario for me as a Texans fan is if Nick Chubb's getting carries early. And Joe Mixon is a guy that's available in third down situations when you get behind the chains or in fourth quarter when you got to go 2-minute offense, that kind of thing.
Yeah. For me, I look at it, and I do think that as of right now, and I do think that that does include the health and age of Nick Chubb, although Joe Mixon's not that far behind him. I get your point. And I do. I think Joe Mixon should definitely be explored more in the passing game than he was last year because I do think that is a strength of his. But as of now, I don't know how it breaks down. I feel like going into games, the thought is, like, Mixon's our primary back, and coming out of the game, you know, who knows what happens with injuries, but coming out of the game, more times than not, the thought is he is going to be the one that gets the most touches from the backfield as of right now. I don't know what injuries could occur.
Well, I think that's definitely got to be where their mind is right now because we don't know what Nick Chubb we're getting. We have no idea.
Now, I will say Nick Chubb, when he was in this situation in Cleveland with Kareem Hunt, and Kareem Hunt came over after he had his troubles and they picked up Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb had 1,067 yards, 12 touchdowns, and then Kareem Hunt had 841 in that year. Kareem Hunt had had 38 receptions, and Nick Chubb had 16 receptions in that season. But oddly enough, Kareem Hunt had 198 attempts to Nick Chubb's 190. So Kareem Hunt actually had more attempts, although Chubb was a more bigger play guy. And he had that to me seems like that would be the dream, but I almost in some ways feel like it would be in the reverse.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I mean, obviously you're not gonna come in and hey, Joe Mixon, you're the third down back for the Texans. I mean, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying when it all comes out in the wash, if we look back at it and Nick Chubb was more of your bruiser, more of your downhill, established the run back, and Joe Mixon was your change of pace back, if you will. I know they're more similar than a true change of pace back, but he is that. And then all of a sudden he's fresh and he's available in passing situations to pass, a big bodied back that can pass protect and can run the football and is available in the pass game. Like, I just think that's the best version of the Texans offense. And again, this is all the context of this is if, which it's a long shot, if you get a Nick Chubb that's anywhere close to what we saw in Cleveland when he was one of the best backs in the league, how do you deploy these guys? Right? I think the best way to do, I would love to see Joe Mixon fresh and in the game on third downs.
Yeah,
that's what I would like.
I know last year you're thinking it was Dari Ogunbowale.
Hopefully we're beyond that.
But I'm just saying as the difference
if you got a plan, like to me there's got to be a plan. It can't just be, hey man, we got two backs and we're just going to turn around and hand it off to whoever's back there, right? Yeah. You don't know how the game's going to unfold. If you've got two backs you trust, two backs you believe in, two backs that can run G schemes, two backs that can run the zone schemes, that can do it all inside and out, okay, which one is better under in certain circumstances? I would say that really they're both pretty damn good, but I would say that if you get the best version of Nick Chubb, he's probably the better downhill runner. If you get the best version of Joe Mixon,
he's healthy. Joe's pretty good too.
No, Joe's physical. There ain't no doubt. Joe is physical as hell. But Joe ain't never been one of the best in the league. And Nick Chubb has been that when everybody everybody watching the Browns knows they're gonna run the ball. And so it's not slighting either guy. It's just, boy, if you've got that two headed monster, what is the most powerful way to do it? In the fourth quarter, you got to run a 4-minute offense. You got both of them pounding. If you got to go into a 2-minute offense and play catch up, I like to have Joe healthy. I like to have Joe fresh.
Text line rolled through. How do you get them both on the field together? How can we do that?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think.
I mean, here's the interesting part of that is I know D'Amico would love to. I mean, I do believe that when you look at how New England used to play football, which I think Nick Caley's going to do. I think when you take into account you got a defensive minded head coach that knows he's going to have a great defense. I don't think these guys are in a spot where they're like, oh, we got C.J. Stroud, we better throw it X number of times. I think if they can go out there and generate a run game where it makes sense to put both guys on the field, especially if you're not getting any more out of Dalton Schultz than you got last year, especially if these rookies take a little while to come along and be productive in the pass game, it's easier to run block than it is to pass block. So if this offensive line is more built to run block, it wouldn't shock me. And if D'Amico Ryans had it his way, I'd be willing to bet you he'd absolutely love it.
Yeah. Someone said, Clint, I think you got something there. Why don't they alternate series like running backs in Detroit do? I think Detroit probably played it by field too.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's where I was going to go with that earlier. When I said Detroit, like it's, if you watch Detroit when everybody's healthy. Now what's the other kid, the Thunder? What's the running back from Detroit?
Montgomery.
Like when he's healthy, when they're all healthy, it's clear he's the more downhill between the tackles physical type back, of back, yeah. and more physical back.
They have a
back.
More separation of
they that. Have a true thunder lightning. Yes, no question about it. But if you look at these guys, to me, when you look at the two backs that we have, I think Joe is the more lightning, not necessarily with speed, but just more of a skill set. So I just think that's best case scenario, man. I mean, that is a fresh Joe Mixon. I mean, because Joe, like, I just don't know, Ron, do you look at it like Joe's his own worst enemy, man. And I think he had to overwork last year for every yard that he got. That's what made last year so impressive for him. He did a lot of it on his own. But, like, I mean, Joe is a lot more punishing when finishing runs than I thought he was.
Yeah, I would hope that he is fresher and that he has opportunities to become fresher. But, I still think right now, and again, as you're saying, what will it project? Right now, I still think he is the better back that I would
too.
Want to
yeah,
see
I do too, because I don't
to
think,
get more touches.
I do too, because I don't think after the surgery, after the foot injury, I don't think you're going to get a Nick Chubb that, you know, that was here 2 years ago. But it, best case, if you do, if we're living right and it's the Texans' turn to hit a couple of home runs with these kind of signs, how do you want that to look?
All right, coming up a little 5 o'clock fire. We'll get you the latest update we do have on Lance McCullers and how he went on the IL, as well as what's happening, the biggest injury in the NBA Finals. There's an update there as we continue right here. More NFL news around the league as well. A little 5 o'clock fire coming up next as we continue right here live on The Drive.